The Here podcast is all about reclaiming your power and reconnecting with your mind and body. By releasing our stories and the power they have had over our lives and creating a compassionate and supportive community, we can bring love, understanding, awareness, and healing to ourselves and to all who need it most. Join me in saying, enough is enough. I own my power. I am ready for the next chapter of my life, and it will be the most amazing one yet. So very much for being on the show today. For the audience, we have an amazing woman on the show today that reached out to me and wants to share her story so that she can help other people feel like they're not alone, and also so that they can learn, hear what she went through and learn ways that she has been on this journey of healing and how she has taken that and started to heal herself. She did ask to remain anonymous. So I am just very honored that you came to be on the show today. So I would love to hear what you came to share about your story and the ways that you have been able to find healing despite everything that's happened.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and allowing me to share my story. Where to start? I guess, you know, when the hashtag Me Too movement started, I won't say that I didn't have compassion, but I guess because I had been through several instances myself and kind of felt like, I guess for me, I always took, I'll say responsibility now, but I think back then it's probably that I blamed myself. You know, I think I felt like, okay, well, those things happen and they're unfortunate and they happened to me and you know, I got past them and here I go. But I think the more that I have undergone therapy and journaling and am writing, I think it's helped me come to realize that these instances kind of link up and they're part of who I was as a child and who I showed up as a young adult. And I think it carried into my marriage. And I think it ultimately was what ended my marriage. And I, you know, I think I found that I lived, I think most of my life in a state of kind of chronic shame and I wasn't aware of it. What was going on in my house was not good for me or for my children. And I don't know how or why I chose to pull myself out of it when I did finally. But I'm grateful that I did because I've been able to get that space from the problem and recognize which parts of it, you know, were my responsibility and give back the parts of it that weren't mine to take responsibility for or to accept blame for. And it's helped me to be a whole lot happier and healthier as I move forward in my friendships and my relationships, and also helping to lead my children down, I think, a better path. So I feel happy that I can say, you know, I underwent all this, but it's what has kind of brought me to where I am at this moment and who I know I'm going to keep growing into. And also that I kind of broke that cycle for my children. So that's, I guess, why I came.
That's beautiful. I love that you broke that cycle for your children. And I really like how you put that. I looked at what was my responsibility and gave back what wasn't. And I think that will resonate with a lot of people because we tend to take it all. Mm-hmm. And that's where that shame comes in. But this is like, no, okay, this is yours. And this is not mine to feel bad about anymore.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's also hard when you start discussing it. Because I think, you know, me starting to discuss it, I guess, came when I had to call my parents and let them know that my marriage was over and that I needed to get out for my own sanity and mental health and for my children. And they were shocked, but not really, because I think, you know, I think in hindsight, everybody can look back and see that there was abuse going on in my house. And it was not so obvious because it wasn't physical abuse. It was emotional and psychological, and it's not quite as obvious. And there used to be days where I would wish or pray that he would punch me or leave a mark, because I felt that that would have been the line that if it had been crossed, I could have easily walked away. But I think I got to this point after I was married for 20 something years. I think, you know, when you're constantly being emotionally abused and you're constantly being told you're not good enough, or the favorite word that I used to be called was that I was a dumb fucking cunt in front of my children. And I think when you're gaslit and everything, you know, gets turned around, I am the most apologetic person. I take responsibility for everything. That's just my nature. So then when you apologize for something that happens and you're belittled and you're called names and you're, you know, your whole world gets turned around so that you don't even know what end is up anymore, I really started doubting my sanity. And that was the hardest part, because it was like, I didn't even know what to do anymore. Nothing I did was good enough, and nothing I did fixed it. And, you know, I think my kids actually had a clearer view of it, because they unfortunately watched it. And yes, it was also perpetrated against them, but I was the main, I think I stepped in front of them when it got turned on them. So it, you know, it's hard because, you know, you hear that for long enough and you start to believe it, you know, it's hard. So I definitely, you know, came out of my marriage feeling like I had no worth. I had no value. I didn't know what self-care was. I didn't know what self-compassion was. And I certainly didn't know what self-love was. And so that's kind of the journey I've been on over the last year or two. And I actually did the desire map with by Danielle Laporte. And one of my five words or emotions of how I want to feel, so that my words were authentic, joy, healthy, like mentally and physically healthy. I wanted to be affluent. Not that I really want to feel rich. I'm still feeling guilty about that word. I got to work on that one. But just, I'm tired of being in debt. I want to, you know, get my finances under control. And I'm doing a much better job with them now that I get to control them. But the last one was that I wanted to be loved. And she talks about how when you pick these words, you don't want to pick words that require somebody else to give you that. So being loved would be that I would need somebody else to love me, right? And right. She says, choose to be love, or choose to be loving instead. And I mulled it over and I wrote love on my list, because that's what she said. And it bothered me for a while. And then I was like, no, because I am love. That's just naturally who I am. And I am loving to my children, to my students, to my patients, to my friends, to my family, even to my ex. But what I want to be is loved. And a friend of mine who's a therapist said, well, you know, but still, what are you going to do about the external factor? And I said, but I already am loved. I'm loved by my children. I'm loved by my students. I'm loved by my patients. I'm loved by my family. And I need to work on being loved by myself. And and I don't think that requires somebody else. I think that's something I can give myself. And I can actually happily say that I do love myself now. So it was a lot of pain and shit that I had to clean up. But, you know, was worth it, if I guess it got me to this point, because I was never here, not even before my marriage. So
that is amazing. I got cold chills when you said that. Because you can be loved by yourself.
You can. It's kind of like when they say that you need somebody else for closure. You don't. You can give yourself the gift of closure. You can give yourself the gift of forgiveness. You can give yourself the gift of being loved too.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that. You had mentioned when you were talking, you were saying that there were some things going back to childhood and living in a long journey of shame, or holding on to shame.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny, I guess I can't say they didn't scar me, because they probably had to have. But I guess I recently had a conversation with my oldest child, who is in college, and we were talking about relationships and dating and how sex fits in, and, you know, sex versus intimacy and being responsible and, you know, when are you really ready and things like that. And so I was saying how he asked me, you know, when I had my first sexual experience, and I told him it was with his father, which I tend to think of is my first real sexual experience that was my choice. But my first sexual experience was actually in high school with my high school boyfriend. And I had gone through multiple boyfriends. So one my freshman year, one my sophomore year, two my junior year, where every single relationship ended up with them cheating on me because I wasn't ready to have sex. And so then I think back to my true actual first sexual relationship or, you know, experience was actually with a high school boyfriend who I had been dating for quite a while, and I was not ready. And we discussed it, you know, as you do in high school, right? They want to, yeah. You're not ready. So we discussed it over and over and over. It was very clear I was not ready. But I think something that might be a challenge for me, and I think it might be a challenge for other women who have been through this, or men too, that there's this this conflicting thing between maybe what your natural like sensuality or sexuality is versus what your choice is. Because I do think that I'm a very sensual, affectionate, you know, senses like everything, sights, smells, you know, I'm a touchy person, I'm an affectionate person. And I do enjoy sex, but I wasn't ready to have it at 16 or 17 or whatever I was in that relationship. So I remember the night that it happened, and I remember everything that led up to it. I remember saying no. I don't remember the rest of the evening. I don't remember how I drove myself home. But I do know that I had sex because the next morning he called in a tizzy, woke my parents up, called in a tizzy, had to speak to me because I guess he had used a condom, but it had come off and it had gotten stuck inside of me. Oh, so I knew that I had been date raped because I had to fish a condom out of myself. And I don't, you know, I never told my parents, and I never told anybody until actually my husband. And interestingly, his response was always he wanted to deny that it happened. He never would let me talk about it. You know, it was just this awful thing. And he definitely wanted to deny, you know, that. So I think it's kind of funny. It's like, I guess I denied that that even happened. Until I shared that story with one of the first men I dated after my husband and I separated, was just somebody I felt very comfortable with. And somehow we were talking about first sexual experiences, and I felt comfortable to tell him that story. And he handled it in such a more gracious and accepting way, certainly, than my ex-husband had. So it was kind of like, oh, okay. And, you know, and this man thought, wow, you know, how did you survive that? And I thought, I just did, but I guess now it doesn't really bother me anymore because here I am talking about it, you know?
Yeah.
But when I wrote to you about what my experiences were, I even forgot that before that. So in my, let's see which way to go, backwards or forwards. I'll go backwards first and then I'll go forwards. When I was growing up, my dad used to have his boss and his wife over for dinner sometimes, and they had a teenage daughter, and I was, I'm going to say maybe like 10 to 13 at the time. And she was, you know, 17 or 18 in high school. And she was this gorgeous, glamorous, bossy person. And we used to hang out in my room. And I remember the parents used to say like, oh, isn't it great, you know, how nice she was to me. And what used to go on in my room was she would make me get undressed, and she would position me or pose me and pretend to take pictures of me. And, you know, in hindsight, like that, again, this popped up just the other day. I'm like, yeah, that wasn't really appropriate or acceptable. But I never said no. I think I'm not very good. I'm a recovering people pleaser, so I'm not very good at saying things that I think are going to displease people. And I definitely know I wanted to impress her. I didn't want to cause trouble with my parents. So, you know, I let it happen. Should it have happened? No, but I did let it happen. So
I think that was really important. Well, everything you're sharing is important, but that was really important as well, because we tend to think of, if you're a woman, it's a man, right? Mm-hmm. A man doing something, a boy doing something, but here's a teenage girl.
Right.
You look up to her, you're a young girl, she's a teenage girl, and she's like telling you to do this. And it's almost like it's the same. It's not appropriate. It's abuse.
Yeah.
But it's almost like you don't think of it that way at that time because she
she's not an adult or
she's not an adult and she was a girl. Mm-hmm. And I understand when you say that you let that happen. But what's really hard with that is how do we as children not let that happen? Like how do we, it's almost like we can't, we're not, someone had said to me, don't be mad at yourself for, I've mentioned this before, I'm horrible at quoting, but it's something like, you can't be mad at yourself for not knowing algebra in kindergarten, let's say. So as children, how do we even know? We are taught to trust adults, trust who our parents tell us we can trust. Like I don't know that there's even a letting that happen to you when you're a child. And this is another important thing for parents is when you have people over with their children who are older or even maybe the same age, you have to be very aware with what's going on. I know in a previous episode, a guest shared that she was like at a slumber party and the older brother's friend, you know, so just being aware, but thank you for sharing that. I just wanted to
point that out. You're right. And I think, you know, I have three boys. And so I think people always say it's different for, you know, parents of boys than girls, but on the flip side, your son can be accused of doing something he hasn't done either. Right. And so I've kind of always had an open door policy with my kids. I don't trust that what they're getting with in terms of sex ed is all that they need. And possibly that's because I know anatomy. So I want to make sure they know that. But I also think more the intimacy and the responsibility and the feelings part of it. I wanted to make sure that not only that they, you know, made sure that a female was or male or whoever they're being involved with, right, but that their partner consents, but also that they're truly ready and consenting and that they understand the ramifications, you know, because I think some of what did come up during the hashtag Me Too time was, you know, I think a lot of women maybe wanting to point fingers at people and blaming people for maybe bad decisions they did make, right? Like, well, I did agree to sleep with that man and I regret it the next day. So now I'm going to just blame him, you know? And I think we have to be careful with that as well, right? That, you know, yes, there are times when things are perpetrated on us, but there are also times where we just have to own our own bad decisions.
Yes. Oh, and there's such a, yes, there's such a fine line right now. I noticed the same thing. I noticed, and I think that some of the cases they had even shown or proved that people maybe regretting that they did it or something would bring it forward. Not all of them. I mean, this is an amazing, powerful movement, right?
But absolutely, yes. I don't want to shame the movement at all.
No, not at all.
I think we have to have these conversations, yes.
Yes. So, you know, if you were like, yeah, I want to do this at the time and then did it and then, you know, regretted it, that's not truly fair to say against somebody else. Right. But then there was all the people, but then how do you differentiate those things? Right. Because then you want to make sure that, you know, everyone who is sharing their story and stepping up, or maybe they did it, but they felt like they had to for some reason or whatever the case may be. And another thing I noticed was women, so not a lot, thank goodness, but I did notice this a little bit. Other women bashing other women for not coming out, or you're finally coming out now. Yeah. And it's just like, it's everybody's journey. It's their own journey. And you're only ready to share your story when you're ready.
Absolutely.
We should just celebrate when that time comes, if it comes.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. And I think, you know, so I said, I wasn't sure if I should go backwards or forwards. So the backwards was going to that, you know, that preteen incident. And then when I go forwards, when I go into, you know, what was actually going on in my marriage, I think this is probably where I have the most shame, because I feel that I should have made better decisions. I should have trusted my gut, and I should have not done some of the things that I did. But in order to, quote, save my marriage, my ex convinced me that we needed to do some swinging. Mm-hmm. And it was his fantasy to have me sleep with other men and have him watch. And I thought my marriage was ending at that point, and I thought I was failing at it, and I thought I was a bad wife. And so I chose to go along with that against my better judgment. So I'm not proud that I did that. Cause it wasn't anything I ever thought of doing or wanted to do. And I think it's what finally, made me hit rock bottom. Because, you know, it caused tremendous stress and tension and strife and obviously shame within me. And it did take me to a point where I was suicidal, and I just didn't know how to get out of it and didn't know how to stop it. And speaking to my ex was not the solution, because he just would get more and more angry with me. But I will say that while it's not a decision I'm proud of, and I do take responsibility as a grown adult woman, I did it. I can now look back and say, like you were saying, you know, you never know where these women were at that point. I know that after years and years of chronic abuse, I know that I was not in my right head at all. And I'm not saying that to make an excuse, but more to maybe help other women understand that, you know, when you hear that you're not worthy, and when you feel that you're not worthy, and you think that doing something like that is the only reason that your husband is going to stick with you or still love you, I don't know. It does put you in a very messed up state of mind. But, you know, they always say that, you know, that thing that doesn't break us makes us stronger. What I am fortunate for is that in that swinging lifestyle and experiences and those things that he was so adamant were what were going to make us unique and what were going to save our marriage, I did have the fortune to meet several very honest and very real men, some of whom have stayed my friends, like just platonic, no sex friends, but who treated me with kindness and respect that I recognized I was not getting from the person that was supposed to love me more than anyone. And I think that is what made me finally have the courage to leave, because I realized that I was allowing that to happen to myself, and that I needed to step up and change and be a different person and be a better mother for my kids. And I think that, you know, seeing myself through these interactions with, you know, people that I hadn't known, that I had met for the first time, and seeing them treat me with respect or kindness or appreciate me just as a person, and not just because they were trying to have sex with me, and maybe that's all it was, but whatever. For the moment, it made me feel like I had some value. But I think it helped me recognize that my marriage lacked intimacy and it lacked trust, because I could not trust my ex-husband in the fact that I could not be who I really was, because who I really was wasn't who he wanted me to be. And I wasn't willing to be who he wanted me to be, because that's not the person I am, and that's not the mother I want to be for my children. So while it's embarrassing and shameful, and it's been read out in a court of law in front of everybody in my neighborhood, it is what it is. It's the journey that I had to take to get to this point. I hope my kids don't ever find out about it, but if they do, I will have to face it, right? But yeah, so that's how I got to the point where I was at rock bottom and decided that I needed to kind of find that self-worth and self-acceptance and self-love that I had been denying myself.
I don't know if this will help, but I understand. I hadn't shared this before, but I was actually in a relationship that I knew I probably should have been out of, and I was trying to save it. And the person I was with at the time also wanted to swing. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling that exact way of there's all different types of sexual preferences and desires and things that people like to do. Mm-hmm. And I remember at the time, like, I was like, if this is something that you're into, I mean, fine. But what felt so bad was because that wasn't who I was.
Right.
Like you're saying, like, I feel bad doing this because this is not what I want. I don't want to be with somebody who wants me to be right. with other people. I don't want to be okay with my person being with somebody else. That's just not my thing. And right. You're very brave to share that. And I just wanted you to know that I understand, and that especially in that experience, that you're not alone in that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I think that part of it is kind of why I felt compelled to share my story, because I don't think it's as rare as one might think, especially, you know, in marriages that have been going on for a long time. And I think it's hard. I think, you know, I remember trying to explain it to my ex as, you know, okay, well, if we'd been married for 20 years and you all of a sudden revealed to me that your deepest, darkest fantasy or who you are was gay, let's say, right? Okay, well, what do we do with that? You know, does that mean that you don't want to be with me, or you only want to be with men, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. You would talk that out and you'd work that out. And, you know, and I know marriages that have ended for those reasons, you know? But I think that, you know, it's interesting. I'm Catholic, and you go to this thing called pre-Cana before you get married, right? Are you going to raise your kids in the Catholic Church, and are you going to follow the rules and all that stuff? And I almost think that couples really should have some kind of like values and intimacy and sexual education, like not just the, you know, X goes into Y slot, but that whole intimacy piece, or the, you know, what are your desires? Or maybe it's just that, you know, as we get older, we get more in touch with our desires, or they change too, right? We grow into them. But I think, you know, I've done a lot of reading on it too. And I love to read historical fiction and romantic fiction, and I like a good erotic fiction myself too.
Yeah, but,
like I said, I'm a sensual and sexual person, and I own that. Doesn't mean I want to have it with everyone. Thank you very much. But, and I definitely don't like women. I know that part, but, and now I know where that came from.
All right.
But, I think, you know, I remember hearing, I think her name is Maddie Moon. She's on Instagram, and she does like body healing. And she talked, one of her podcasts was about the difference between fantasy and desire. And I think those were the two words she used. And, you know, where fantasy might be that you might have a fantasy to be shared by two men, and that thrills you, or that excites you, or that turns you on. But that doesn't mean you would ever really want to do it in real life. Whereas a mm-hmm. desire is something that you truly want to act upon. And I think, you know, she advocates, you know, in healthy relationships, that you talk about those things with each other, because certainly discussing your fantasies with each other, you know, you can role play, you can share that, you gain intimacy and trust with each other as you do that. But if your desires aren't aligned, you know, if you're heterosexual and your spouse ends up being, you know, bisexual or gay, well, then that doesn't really line up in reality, right? So right. I think, you know, I think it's healthy for us to have these conversations, not only about our gender orientation, but what our fantasies and our desires are, and be careful not to blur those lines. Because I think, you know, when you do, that's when I think either that regret or that, you know, being forced or being coerced, right, to do those things becomes a problem in a relationship.
You are absolutely right. I love that. So you said Maddie Moon, because I'm going to
look
her up.
Her name is Maddie Moon. Yeah, I can look her up okay. on Instagram right now. She's great.
I was just talking to my husband about this, and I want to do a whole month of podcasts episodes geared towards intimacy. So a lot of people mm-hmm. ask about it. And I completely agree with that. I think that that whole thing you mentioned, like before you get married, you should absolutely, I wonder how it would work, because usually kind of when you're newly into something, right, you want to present your best self ever. And yes. You might think that your little desire is, you know, that might turn the other person away. But in the long run, it's probably
they're gonna
better.
Come out. Well, they're either gonna come out, they're either gonna come out and you're gonna be disappointed because they can't provide them to you, right? Or they're gonna come out and they're gonna be disappointed because they're not interested. You know, like either way, it's a lack of trust and vulnerability with each other to not be able to share that.
Yeah, exactly. That this person that I was with that ended up really wanting to get into that whole world and just swinging and all of that sort of thing. If I had known in the beginning that that was their thing, and you even knowing what has happened to me in my past, that is not my thing and it would never be my thing.
Right.
So it would have been better just like right there and to say, well, this isn't going to be a right match because because in that particular relationship, I've been in an abusive relationship. This particular relationship wasn't abusive, but it was as soon as we got into a relationship, it turned to where he was all about that. He was very heavily into porn and I did not know that was not the self presented to me in the beginning.
Right.
And so I completely agree with you. And some type of a mandatory counseling, not religion related, because you don't want anything, the sin and all of that stuff to come into it.
Yeah, we don't need that with sex. We got enough guilt going around in the world.
I think that would be amazing. And even like a couple, someone could say, I'm really into this. And the other person goes, well, you're not ever going to do that with me. And then at that point, how into it am I? Is it a desire or is it really a fantasy?
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, you know, do you want to have kids, right? You have couples who say absolutely yes. Like the woman might say absolutely yes. The man might say absolutely no. Is it a deal breaker? Like you kind of need to know those things, you know? But I also think some of those things are things that you grow into knowing or learning about yourself. Because, you know, I met my ex, I was 18. And, you know, so I had, you know, the history of relationships I had. And then I meet this charming man who says he's not going to be like that. And, you know, let's not talk about the date rape and let's move on and be happy. And who was I at 18? I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't, my dad now says, well, you know, what have you learned and what are the red flags so you don't do that again? And I'm like, how about the fact that I'm grown up now? How about the fact that I love myself now? Like, I think, you know, I don't think I knew who I was at 18. And that's part of what I was counseling my son recently is, you know, there's no rush to fall in love and find the woman of your dreams. Like, she'll come when you're ready. And what's more important is for you to learn to be the man who deserves her, you know, and learn to be yourself and learn to know yourself and know your authentic self, you know? And I think as I watch friends of mine who are dating, you know, you said dating that person that you later found out that was into porn, right? I think that's part of the problem with dating is people don't show up as their authentic self, right? Because they're not comfortable. They might not know who they are, or they might not feel comfortable being who they are, or they're trying to be who they think the other person wants them to be. And, you know, that's why one of my five core desired words was being authentic, because I think my whole life I've always tried to be who my parents wanted me to be, who my teachers wanted me to be, who my coach wanted me to be, you know, who my dance instructors wanted me to be, who, you know, who my ex wanted me to be, who my kids think I should be. And I think it's time for me to start being me. And I think I'm a pretty good person. So I want to be this person. I want to try on the real me for a while and enjoy being her.
Yeah. And I bet all those people you mentioned, like your children and your dance instructor, I bet all of those people would just love the you that you are.
Well, I'm definitely getting that feedback. So, you know, in the last year or two, the changes that I've made, it's a little hard because I'm setting boundaries now, boundaries for myself, which I didn't used to do. And that's, you know, a change that people have to get used to. But I do them lovingly, kindly, you know, and I explain them, and I know it's a shift that everybody's going to have to get used to. But yeah, I would say, you know, I went from a marriage where I was very isolated and really didn't have any friends and had really stepped away from my family and my coworkers. And I have such a huge support group now. It's amazing. And, you know, my college son even said this year, as I dropped him off, what a difference a year made. Because last year he was scared. It was his first year. And he was so worried about leaving me and his brother's home. And he said, you know, I'm not scared to leave you anymore, because you have such a big circle of people around you. And I do. And I think part of that was me just pulling my head, you know, out of this fog and asking for help and showing up and being present and being me. And, you know, and I'm a lot happier, that's for sure.
That is awesome. When did you start realizing that you needed to heal? Was that right at the, like when you left your marriage? And then what were some of the things that you did and are doing to help heal. Promote your, yep, help to reconnect with yourself and reclaim your power?
I think I knew I needed to heal about 6 months before my ex and I finally like officially separated and he moved out. And I had asked for a divorce. He had said he would not put me in that place again where he had me on the floor in tears. And if he ever did that again, he'd be the first one to leave. And so he did it on Thanksgiving. And I asked, you know, I just said, I can't take this anymore. I need to breathe. I need to not feel like this all the time. And he, you know, begged to stay, and he begged to finally go to counseling, which, you know, by the by, we've never gone. And it was Thanksgiving, and we went to, you know, family Thanksgiving, whatever. And I remember just sitting in the car on the drive thinking, I don't care if he and I go to therapy, but I need to go to therapy, because this is just, I don't want to be like this anymore. And I don't want to feel hopeless and helpless and like I want it to end, because I don't want to do that to my children. They've been through enough. And so I started seeing a therapist soon after that, but not regularly because his schedule was full. And it's a challenge to find a therapist and network and, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. But then my ex had gone on a business trip and he was mad at me and he left me a letter with his wedding ring. And it was a very passive aggressive, you know, obviously you don't treat me like I should be treated and you don't love me and you don't like me and I'm going to leave my ring and maybe you should have an open marriage or maybe you should date around until you realize I'm the best thing that's ever happened to you. And, you know, the day you give me the ring back will be the happiest day of my life. And it was just this whole thing that, of course, you know, made me feel guilty again for not making him happy. And I went to therapy and my therapist had double booked me with somebody else and was like, I'm sorry, I can't see you today. And I was like holding this letter and my ex's wedding ring, like, no, you have to see me today. I have to make a decision while he's away. So I sat in the parking lot and I called my brother, who is my best friend and my strongest supporter and had to be my, my external sanity for quite a while. But I called him and he, you know, my family kind of knew something was up at that point. And I said, you know, I don't think I can take this anymore. And he said, well, he walked out, he left. You're going to tell him he can't come home and you're going to say you need some space. And I think I did need that because I when he was around, it was like walking on eggshells and I really could just never even tune in to what I thought or what I felt. And I think in hindsight, you hear about how people go into fight or flight mode, right? Well, there's a third option, which is to hide. And I see in my three children, I have one who's a flighter, I have one who's a fighter, and I have one who's a hider. And I was a hider. So I would just hide what I thought and felt to keep the peace. And yeah. I had to, for a while, I kind of had to journal and just dig down and find out, well, what do I actually feel? I think I was numb for a while. So going to therapy, I think, is definitely necessary. You need somebody outside of you to help you see things clearly or to just give you that space to hear you, to see you, to validate, you know, what you're feeling, and to, you know, help you be honest with yourself. from the very get-go, my brother, my mom and my dad and my sister-in-law immediately put me in a four-way or five-way text with them because they don't live near me. But whenever I would get a text or a letter, and there were plenty from my ex, where I would start doubting myself that I had made the wrong decision, that I was ruining my family, that I was ruining my kid's life by this decision, I would call, I would put an SOS out into that text, and one of them would call or text me immediately. And that really helped for me to have that constant, like, I'm losing my mind, I'm not sure what I'm thinking, as I just really didn't trust myself. And my word for 2018 was trust. It was learning to trust myself, trust what I thought, trust what I felt, trust the process, trust the universe. And then I definitely had a very negative inner critic. And she was constantly, you know, repeating the DFM name that I had and all sorts of other nasty, you know, things that had been said to me. And I remember reading a book that said you needed to start replacing those voices in your head. So it told me to replace the words with the opposite. So instead, I became a brilliant fucking goddess. So I would remind myself that because I would make jokes about it, and I would make jokes about it in front of my kids. And I think I did it in like a self-deprecating way, or to try to laugh it off, to maybe let my kids know that it didn't hurt me. And then one day my two older boys like stopped me in a parking lot, and they're like, "We don't ever want to hear that expression again, Mom. It should never have been said." And I have since found out that that's actually sexual abuse for one adult to do that to another adult in front of children. So, you know, my kids were like, "No." And so I was like, "Okay, you're right. I read this thing and it told me to replace it with this." And they laughed and they're like, "Yes, you are a brilliant fucking goddess. So that's what we want to hear." So my boys have been a great support because, you know, they saw it all and they went through it all. So, you know, we've all kind of had to lean on each other and help each other out. But I did name my inner critic at one point. A coworker told me, she knew I had this inner critic, and she goes, "We're going to name her." So we had a really funny night one night where we tried to come up with mean girl names, and my inner critic, her name is Brittany, and as in Brittany bitch. So I tell her to shut up. But it's funny, almost as soon as I named her, she stopped showing up. It's kind of funny. I don't know why. I had one night where I remember the negativity came back, but I don't put myself down in my head anymore, which is good. So then, you know, I think stopping that negative self-talk is important. And then I had one really awful night where I did feel suicidal again, and I worried about my kids and tried to figure out, you know, who else would maybe be better for them or be a better mother for them, that, you know, I didn't know that I was strong enough to continue being what they needed me to be. And I sent a text out, not a suicide text, but a like, "I'm having trouble" text to my four, my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister-in-law, a couple good friends at work, and my very good friends in my book club. And I told them all that I was really struggling with the negative thoughts in my head, and that if they had a moment, if they could just send me back something that was positive about me that I could replace the thoughts with. And, I cried all day that day as these compliments and comments and things came back, and I copied them all and I put them in a notes document on my phone so that if I ever got to that rock bottom place again, I could pull it out and remember why I should be alive and why I was needed. But I also haven't needed to pull that document up either. I think just that act of going through it that day was enough to remind me that I mattered to enough people, I should stick around. So that was something, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so, and I want to repeat them because they are amazing and I want the listeners to hear them. And these are tangible things they can do, and they're things I'm going to do as well. I think that group text idea is phenomenal. So to find, a few people that you can go to and that you can trust and have that group text so that when things are going awry or you're feeling bad, that you could pop into that text, or if you need help, mm-hmm. and somebody will be there for you. That is phenomenal. I'm going to do that. And the other thing too, so naming your inner critic. Mm-hmm. As you were saying this, I just had an experience, but with my daughter with this, I don't know why. I might know why it works, maybe. So here's the thing. I'm going to get it out. So you name that inner critic, you're naming that person, or sorry, that the inner critic. And by giving them a name and talking to them in talking about them in that way, they become a them now, and yes, not a you.
Totally. And
the only reason that started clicking for me is my daughter, my youngest one, she was really struggling with some OCD type mm-hmm. tendencies. And so we brought her to a therapist who specializes with OCD in children. And she had said, have her name that OCD feeling. Okay. And so my daughter named her Havana Unana, because she loves that song. But and we drew a picture of Havana and all of this stuff. And so when my daughter would come and she wanted me to, they call it complete the loop. Mm-hmm. You know, she's asking me to redo something and then to get and for me to respond a certain way. I would say, is that Havana asking me to do it or is that you asking me yes. to do it? And so then it takes that, oh, I don't have OCD. I don't have a problem. It's this mm-hmm. Havana character.
Yes, yes, definitely.
Do you think maybe that?
Yeah, I do. Because yeah, I mean, I used to think the things I would say in my head, I would never, never, ever, ever say those things to anyone. Not even yeah. my worst enemy. Not even yes. my ex. You know, I would never be that unkind because I'm just not that person. So I remember thinking, then why do I talk to myself that way? And yeah, so, you know, the names we came up with, it was Savannah and Heather and, you know, it was all these names and we were laughing, you know, naming. And I was like, Brittany, bitch. And my friend's yes. like, yeah, she needs to shut up. So, yeah, so that was, it was good. And yeah, it definitely helped.
I love that. I'm going to have to do that because that is still something I struggle with, even though I've come a long way, just like you have, that inner talk. Mm-hmm. I can't believe how mean I am to myself. That you're absolutely right. I would never.
Yeah.
Even when I was super mad at somebody, I would never, like when I was younger. And
even when I was a teenager and yeah. I was Heather, you know? No, yeah. I wasn't ever, but I never would have. Yeah.
Never. I know this might be a little bit of a side tangent, but yeah, when I was a teenager and people would tease people, oh, you're fat or oh, you're ugly or oh, things like that, I would. That is absolutely unacceptable. That's horrible. Yeah. Now, if I was mad, I might be like, you're a bitch. But that's such like a generic term. Like, right. I would never intentionally say something that was going to make that person feel bad about themselves.
You wouldn't. Like, you wouldn't put a knife never. Into their weakness, their Achilles never. Heel, the thing that they're sensitive about.
No, but, oh, I do that to myself all right. day long. Right. And the third thing you said that I want to make sure that reiterate because it was so great is when you were feeling down and mm-hmm. having those suicidal type thoughts and feeling, yeah, because when you feel that someone else would be a better mom than you, I've been there. And sometimes, I mean, still to this day, yeah. it'll pop up when something doesn't go the way I wanted it to. Right. Being able to pull yourself out of that when you're in it is very hard. So I think that was great that you had the strength to, because that's another piece of it, is having the strength to reach out to somebody to tell them that you're feeling that way and then have them send you positive things about yourself. That I loved that.
And then I did love that I saved it. You know, I think.
Yeah, I have that you put it in a journal. Yeah, you could refer back to it.
I have it in my notes on my phone. So I'm like, no matter where I am, if I'm in and I, you know, feel so blessed that I'm in such a different space that I don't have to go back to it. But, you know, sometimes I scroll back through looking for something. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, remember that day? Like, that was rock bottom. You know, it was one of the rock bottom days. And look at all these people that I'm so blessed to have in my life and have these great relationships with. And, you know, I have the utmost respect and love for them. So then for them to mirror that back and their comments to me, you know, meant so much to me. And I didn't want to have to reach out all the time. I mean, I can and I should, right? But mm-hmm. I kind of felt like if I wrote it down, if I asked them that one time and I could keep it with me, that would, you know, that would help me, but then I wouldn't have to, you know, burden them every time I felt low. And I haven't really been that low again. So, you know, gratefully.
That's wonderful. You also, I can tell by the different things that you are sharing, you read a lot and you research a lot, because you had mentioned you're talking about your words, right? That,
yeah. And
you, it sounds like you do that yearly, because I think you said this year, mm-hmm. my words.
Last year was trust. This year was courage to get through everything that I need to get through. The courage to be vulnerable, the courage to keep being authentic, the courage to get through the divorce process, the courage to start my business. That I needed. This year's about courage.
And how, what does that process look like? So is it like a New Year's thing you do, or where you sit and you meditate, or what? How do you, what's your process for dedicating your year to this word?
You know, I got that from a friend of mine. Her name's Veronica Grant. She is a life coach, and she, I met her through, she did a thing called date yourself challenge. And I was like, well, I'm not dating anybody else, so maybe I should date myself. And it's kind of self-care, self-compassion, kind of learning about yourself. And then she did another 10-day course over the summer called Summer Love School. And it was kind of learning about the different languages of love and kind of how you speak them. But she, I guess, one of the years she had just instead of setting a New Year's resolution, you know, where most people, you know, you look back at last year and you say all the things that went wrong, right? And you say, okay, well, this year I'm going to do this different. It feels like a much more negative, judgmental process, but instead looking towards the new year with kind of hope and an eye for change or an eye for growth. And what is it that you need to do that? And so I guess, you know, when that came up, I was definitely in that space of really just not trusting my perceptions of anything, because they had just been, you know, I had so much doubt in what was really going on around me with the gaslighting, that I, you know, I, like I said, I had to rely on my brother. Can you read this text? Can you read this email? Can you, like, am I crazy? And that was like this common thing. Am I crazy? Am I crazy? And my brother's like, you're so not crazy. And, you know, and here's why. You're right. It starts out really nice, and then it twists, and then it blames you, and then it makes him the victim, and then it makes you the bad guy. You know, so he had to kind of help me find that sense of like, no, I can see it clearly now, and I know who I am clearly now. But I needed to trust that that was possible. Like, I had to trust that, you know, not just that healing takes time, but trust that I was going to heal and that my kids were going to be okay. And that I was stronger than I thought. And I, you know, trust that I wasn't crazy. And so I guess when she just suggested having this word that would guide you, that was just the one that popped into my head, you know, and it was, you know, again, not about, and part of it, I guess, is learning who else to trust, right? How to trust other people. But I think it was more, you know, internally directed that I needed to learn to trust me, that I, you know, that I was okay and that I was going to continue to be okay. And then I guess this year when it came around again and she said, you know, she had asked back how did people do on last year's word and are you sticking with the same one? I was like, I'm there. I do trust myself. I can see reality now. And then it was kind of like, okay, well, where do I want to go next? And I think for me, it was like having that bravery or that courage to do more, not just to survive, right? Or not just to heal and get to baseline, but to do better than that, to be courageous enough, to be vulnerable, to take the next step, to, you know, stop hiding my light under the bucket, to stand up for myself, to stand up for my kids, you know, to make sure that everything moved forward. And so I felt like I needed some courage for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I loved that. I just love everything. But when when you had mentioned that you had to keep telling yourself that you were going to heal, I know when you're in the lows of the lows, or you're in a relationship that's abusive, and or whatever the case may be, it's really, you don't think it's going to get better.
No,
you don't think it's ever going to get better. And that just drags you down deeper.
Yeah.
And so for you focusing and saying, no, I am going to heal, this is going to be okay. And then that helped change your mindset, rewire your brain,
mm-hmm.
and start to grow and leave that situation behind. That's awesome.
And I think that's a choice that we have to make, right? You know, when we look back at these incidents, you know, the people that come on your podcast, right? We can choose to look at ourselves as a victim, or we could choose to look at ourselves as a survivor, you know, or we can choose to believe, it doesn't feel like I'm going to heal today, but I have to have faith and believe that I'm going to be okay, that I will heal in time, that I will find the answers if I'm open to them. And that not only am I going to survive, I'm going to go on to thrive and have a great life, you know? And I think, it's hard to make that choice, but I think that is the only choice you can make, right? You know, especially when you have considered suicide, it's like, okay, well, I chose to live. So if I'm going to live, I want to live the hell out of my life. You know, I want to live and I want to love and I want to do it fully with joy and authenticity and, what, you know, mental and physical health and all the love in the world, you know? So to me, that was a choice that I made, that I wasn't just gonna be a victim and continue to focus on, you know, what had happened or who had done what to me. I wanted to take my power back by looking at, like I said, from the beginning, like, what's my responsibility, not my blame, but my responsibility. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's no responsibility in the past, but there's still responsibility to who I am in this moment and who I choose to be in the future. And that's, you know, for me, I think my three boys were really what kept me going until I realized that I also wanted to keep going for myself. But, you know, I knew I loved them that much, that I owed them that much, you know, to choose to do the best I could to be the mom they needed me to be, you know, to be healthy for them. And they in turn gave me the gift back of helping me learn to love myself, you know? So I'm very blessed in that aspect.
Yes, I had the same experience with my daughters, and that's great that they helped you keep going until that you could love yourself. And now we're obviously still going for our children, but we're going for ourselves now, going from a place where you want to not live anymore to maybe your children propelled you to keep living. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And now at a spot where, oh my gosh, I wish I would have realized this sooner because I would have loved to feel how I'm feeling right now earlier in my life, but that's not what was meant to be.
Nope.
So now I want to live the hell out of this life
right?
before I don't have it anymore.
Exactly. And I want to pass that legacy on to my kids. You know, I think the conversation I alluded to in the beginning that, you know, I was having with my son as I drove him back to college about relationships and love and intimacy, you know, I think, you know, those are conversations that I don't think our generation had with our parents. And I feel so honored that I do have that relationship with my children, that I can have those conversations. And I know they have to make their own mistakes. And, you know, I'm not preaching to him. It's more like we just have that adult relationship where we can share that as friends. You know, it's more like I'm a mentor to him at this point, you know, and it's kind of nice to see. And, you know, and I did see some things being repeated in a relationship that he was in. And I worried that, you know, he's very much like me. And I worried, you know, is he going to have this inferiority complex? And is he going to put up with things that he shouldn't? But he made the right choice and he chose himself and chose to love and honor himself. And that made my heart grow to see, like, okay, like, they're healing, they're growing, you know, this, you know, drama that they lived with their entire life doesn't necessarily have to be their future either anymore, you know, which validates that I made the right choice. And, you know, I wish it hadn't taken me so long, but that, you know, they remind me that maybe if I had, you know, left or ended it sooner, that there would have been, you know, more shared custody and there would have been different problems. So
it is what it is. What a great way for them to see that.
They're good.
Yeah.
They're smart. They're smart. I tell you, I got these live-in wise men who guide me. It's kind of nice.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, I think the same thing sometimes. I'll be like, oh, I wish like my husband, oh, he's so amazing. I wish I would have met him years ago. Well, no, I don't. I'm only saying that because my two older daughters are from a divorce.
Right.
So I want them. Right. And so it's really everything had, you know, happened the way it did to make me who I am today, sitting here doing what we're doing. Yeah. And then that makes me happy. Yeah. I really like how you said this too. Not blame, but responsibility. So not that you did anything wrong, but what was your role or responsibility in it? But that makes it look at it in a very just objective way of, okay, you know what? Should I have left earlier? Because I've been in an abusive relationship too. So I'm not really saying you, should you have left earlier, but we can look at it. And you could say, yeah, I should have because I saw this, this, and this. But guess what? You just weren't at a place where you were ready to.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't really explain it, but I like how you're, you know, blame myself. Man, I should have left. What's wrong with me? Look at all this damage I've done.
Plenty.
Oh no, I bet. But like now being able to see it, you know, see it as, okay, this was my responsibility in it.
Yeah.
And you know what? I've moved on from that. I'm healing. I'm making better decisions and the future is bright.
Yeah. And I'm happy. So, you know, for whatever. And I think that's, you know, that's where I want to go with my future is to help people who, you know, have been through, you know, a big trauma, a little trauma, chronic trauma, multiple trauma, no trauma, but to help them realize that whatever was isn't what has to be in the future, you know, that it can change and it's possible to heal from some pretty horrible things, you know, and you just have to make that choice for yourself and then surround yourself with the right people that are gonna help you. And it takes work. It takes, you know, dedicated work, but it's my life and it's my well-being. And to me, that's something that's worth dedicating myself to.
Absolutely. Whatever was doesn't have to be. That's just fantastic. Okay. I want to respect your time. I absolutely enjoyed our conversation. I always like to end, and there could be nothing. You could have said everything you wanted to, but I always like to end our conversation with, is there anything that you want to make sure you share? Any advice, anything that you want to share before we end our call?
Well, the first thing I would like to say is thank you to you for being so warm and gracious and making me feel comfortable to be able to tell this whole story in its entirety. I told you before we started recording that I actually had never told all of this to one person, you know, bits and pieces here and there. But and I think I had jokingly said to you that shame lives in darkness, right? I think that's Brené Brown talks about that. And I think that's the last thing I would leave people with is that, you know, feeling shame when you, you know, when you screw up and you do something wrong, you know, you jokingly call somebody a bitch or whatever, and you feel bad and you feel ashamed of yourself, you know, that's momentary and that's situational shame, right? But that if people are feeling that sense of chronic shame because of something that happened to them in the past, or maybe something they allowed to happen, right? I take full responsibility for what I allowed to go on in my life to this point. But I truly agree with Brené Brown when she says that when you bring it out into the light and you share it with someone, it makes it a whole lot easier to deal with. So thank you for giving me that opportunity. And I think that what you're doing on this podcast is phenomenal because I think it will help a lot of people get that message and know that they're not alone and that there are people they can talk to get it out and to share it and not live with that shame anymore because it's not worth living with. It's much better to face it, feel it, surrender to it, and then choose to move forward in a happier place.
Oh, thank you very much. I am honored that you shared your story with me. I'm so honored every time I talk with somebody, and every single time I talk with somebody, I learn things. I learn things about myself, and I am so moved, and I really, truly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Well, I hope that you have a beautiful rest of your evening, and thank you again for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.